Welcome to the 118th JBST.com Smartcast, released for August 2013. This is the multi-sport podcast for triathletes, duathletes, sportive riders, road racers, time trialists, runners, mountain bikers, and fitness enthusiasts.
Whatever your distance or whatever your event, this podcast aims to make you smarter and faster.
Thank you for downloading this 118th episode. I'm Coach Joe Beer, and I'm joined once again by Southfork Racing's Martin Crocker.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Joseph.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. How I'm glad. You? I'm very well, thank you.
We've been warming up our vocal cords, haven't we?
Yes.
You've been putting the worlds to rights. Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Wow. If that could only be all be recorded, Martin.
I would be probably in prison. No.
So, to give you some updates between the podcasts, there's been various bits and pieces on the Twitter feed, on bits and pieces to do with athletes, research, tips, time savers. So if you're not already on it, twitter.com/CoachJoeBeer. And there's also a Southfork Racing, which is twitter.com/SouthforkRacing. Or at Southfork Racing.
Or at Southfork Racing.
Yeah. Okay. 50 episodes in the iTunes library. Please give us your ratings. And your reviews. It's always good to find out what we're doing, find out your questions and answers, but also what you think of the podcast. So, news. Come on, news. Think about it. What's gone on in the last month? The Tour de
France.
Française. Yes.
No, the Tour de France is, has
been
and gone.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes. What I particularly like is it seems more, I don't want to say honest, because it makes it
natural.
Yeah, probably a bit more natural.
There seem to be more natural tendencies for people to be blowing up and people to be having off days and not the same people at the front pushing every day.
Yes.
And there was quite a few people, probably most of all, Cadel Evans, that just didn't show his spots.
If only a face could say a thousand words. Well, I don't think it really needed to say a thousand words, did it? It was just the way he was slipping back slowly and the camera just kind of peeked at him and you could just see him going, oh, if the ground could swallow me up now, please. Yeah.
But, you know, there wasn't, yeah. Obviously Froome went to the, the bookies as favourite and did what he did. And there was good performances by lots of people, and there was no sort of surprises where people started scratching their head going, hold on a minute, that doesn't make sense, that's a little bit too good. There was a lot more honest and real performances, you know, where people weren't, people would have a little poke for a couple of days and then they wouldn't. And, you know, Froome did blow up, he did find himself in trouble. Contador wasn't just riding off everyone's wheel. Quintana was probably the find of the year. Yeah. He was just awesome.
And people like Roman Kruziger as well. helping Contador out. And then the next day, halfway up, the man just looked like he was in purgatory. It was horrible to watch. Yeah. It was one of those things, you know, when you watched maybe Ricky Gervais in The Office, and there were certain bits that you just cringed at, that you wanted to turn the telly off. That was how I felt when you just saw him go, pop, oh, I'm going back here. Yeah.
There was some interesting, I was listening to the ITV podcast,
The Broom Chris Wagon. Baldwin, was it the Broom
Wagon? No, that was totally separate.
Ah, right, okay.
With Ned Bolton, Chris Baldwin, and they were making a very interesting point about, you know, as you got near to the last few days, how, you know, Contador's team wasn't exactly necessarily all singing from the same hymn book, and that it was a little bit like, hold on a minute. There was just a few tactics towards the end where you thought it almost seemed as though it was a scurry for anybody to get anything out of it, apart from clearly Froome and then Quintana to get on the podium, and then the rest were scrabbling for the third step on the podium. Yeah, but how everybody else was trying to shine, and there was all this mayhem that went on.
That's the only thing that, when I look back now after watching certain sections of, you know, for starters, things like the Olympics, you see extraordinary kind of performances from people you wouldn't expect it from.
Yeah, yeah.
And the sad thing is now is the first thing you go is, I don't know whether that's right. That doesn't seem right.
Mm.
You know, and what I used to like in the as the Tour de France went along was the fact it became more uniform. It kind of, it all behaved itself, if you know what I mean, until you hit the mountains and then a couple of people tried to pull a fast one but were soon reeled in. And I suppose looking back now, you know, I was sucked in by it all, but you look at the utter mayhem over the last two, maybe 3 years, probably 2 years, you know, the last two Tour de France's, you've just sat there and it has been like watching a soap unfold.
Yeah.
Where you're just going, that can't be happening. He's fallen off. How's he fallen off like that? And you know, you just kind of.
But not only that, don't you think there are people that that used to shine, and now aren't. And yes, they might be a bit older, but there's a sense that it isn't that you could almost pick the people based on the fact that, oh yeah, they're a team leader, as if there was a nod and a wink.
Yeah.
No, there was a lot more people that were clearly that, you know, the team leader is often the one that they think to be best, but the team leaders were not so exceptional that everyone went, oh right, okay, we're just you know, playing the supporting actors. There was actually people that were having good tours that weren't necessarily instantly on people's lips.
No.
And there were people that should have been doing well that didn't, and that kind of makes you think, yeah, it's a more realistic and actually more random race than it used to be, because there aren't just this group of, you know, super beings.
That's
that were
right,
going to
yeah.
battle. You actually had lots more people. There seemed to be a lot more people together in purgatory, a lot more people coming across the line together. Not, I know some of the real mountain stages, people were just doing damage limitation, but
yeah.
And therefore there were a lot more people in, you know, in the you know, the kind of gruppetto, and a lot more people right off the bat just managing to make the time. It just seemed to be like there's a more, it's almost more uniform, you know.
Yeah, I've kind of subscribed to certain people and certain things on Twitter, which are what I'd like to, like, I like to see is a balanced argument. Sometimes I like to see the pros saying what they say. You know, David Miller is one of mine that I've signed up for on Twitter, and he cuts it pretty straight with that. The same with people like Cavendish. You know, the I say poster boys, I don't mean it like that, but you know, the guys that are up there in the media a lot, and the other guys that are kind of in the background, you know, and also there's kind of like a subculture there as well. All the naysayers about they know what's going on, but they don't want to say, or they're not brave enough to say it.
I think
they've been cast as trolls, they call them, kind of on there. But it's quite nice to have that balance now where you think, well, I was looking back and he was, you know, looking back through kind of last year's tour, and yeah, he had a good tour, but this year he's suffered, and you know, and the naysayers going, well, we know he's done this or he hasn't done this, and you know, it's quite a nice contrast now
the overall interesting thing is that, to me, it means that there's more trickle down now. There's more trickle down with the fact that, you know, aero road frames. There was a lot more this year aero road helmets.
Yep.
That still, you know, why not turn up on a totally aero helmet? Because they're getting very close. There's no reason, there's nothing to stop them. If it's illegal, if it's perfectly legal to use it in a TT, they could use it in the road race.
I didn't realise, but if you start a normal stage with an aero cover on your helmet, like for instance Laser do an aero cover, it, you have to finish with it as well, can't take it off. It has to stay on. So yeah. I never realized that as a rule, as a UCI rule.
Yeah, but that whole looking for watts is where they're looking for the watts now.
Yeah,
so they're looking for it in the clothing, in the stitching, in the booties, in the, you know, in the every little bit, which is more likely to trickle down so that you will get more road orientated frames and wheels, etc. And so, although it's a, you know, it's a really good thing to see it happen, it still shows that from team perspective, still some of them really don't do their homework, because some of the choices on that hilly time trial did not make sense. Not the, you know, should they swap, shouldn't they swap bikes? The whole, what equipment have they got anyway? Because if they're on a road-going bike, some of that equipment that they time-trialed on would be laughed at at our time trials, at most time trials, certainly in a lot of triathlons, you'd look at that bike and go, what, on a race against the clock, that's what you're riding, that's your front wheel and things like that. And I thought that was quite amazing, that when you look at the percentage difference, that okay, Chris Froome won by 5 minutes, but you look at that over roughly 90 hours and it is a very small percentage.
Yeah.
And people sort of think, oh, they must be doing something. No, they're doing everything. They're doing everything legally they can. They've got every bit of aero componentry, special wheels, aero helmets. They've, you know, they've practiced that, you know, that change. They've worked out how to do it. And they're even, if you think about it, they're even bringing in the mechanic skill to get a bike off the roof as part of winning the Tour de France.
Yeah, yeah,
nothing
yeah.
to do with whether Chris Froome can ride a bike. It's whether the bloke can get it off the roof, get it on the floor, push him for as long as he can, and then Froome carries on and does the rest.
Yeah.
But other teams either hadn't thought about the swap, and I think Contador admitted he got that wrong,
yeah.
that he should have done it, but also Contador's setup in the standard road bike was pretty rubbish. And you think they are the best of the best, and yet still from a technical perspective,
yeah.
they aren't necessarily doing it right. So if people are looking to say, well, how can he win by 5 minutes? Well, start looking at what the other teams are doing. You've only got to look at some of their mistakes tactically and from a technical point of view and think, well, if you multiply that by 365 days, if they're doing that all the time, they wonder why Sky and some of the other teams are moving forwards,
yeah,
and other teams think that wearing, you know, wearing a skin suit in a sprint stage is probably not really what they need to do. I mean, it's getting to the extent where they need to find those 1% so much that this year you saw even more aero helmets on not just the sprinters but their lead out. And they all had skin suits on, and they were really, really, you know, kind of technically up another stage. And there was more of those sprint lead-out teams, not just one, and everyone said, oh, that's great, there goes the Cavendish train. There was others that proved to be as good, if not better, in many cases. I think, wow, yeah, that's where they're finding their 1%, by tactically choosing a team of riders.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it does, it comes back to the, you know, the training, the nutrition, the technology, not the drugs. That was once, you know, clearly the reason why some people were better than others. And the training, nutrition, technology will trickle down. We learn things from those teams and it passes on.
Yeah.
The drugs thing was never going to be, for anybody that watches the sport, it was only going to show what's possible with, you know, pharmaceutical aids. But it didn't actually help people get better. If anything, it made people have a real exit and entry strategy. If they wanted to become a pro, they had to cross a certain line. In many cases, not in all cases,
yeah, yeah.
in many cases. But a fun 3 weeks.
It was brilliant.
Yeah. And it always brings in that, you know, coach gets wedged underneath, you know, the finish banner.
Start,
and
wasn't it?
And just loads of different things, you know, the you know, Contador you know, almost coming off and almost taking Froome off and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just really interesting.
And that's the good thing now, is I think I hope that everything is so much cleaner now. That's why these guys are scrabbling for those kind of couple of seconds, and that's why these little mistakes get made. And it wasn't because you know, it might be a little bit slippery, you know, it was because these guys have to push on now.
Exactly.
I think
they haven't got, and maybe some people that have complained about descending can't get up the hills quite so quick now. So they're coming down with a lot more people.
Yeah.
Whereas they used to come down with just a few others who'd got away, and then it was down to, you know, what can we do up the last final climb? There seemed to be this year tactics of going downhill that were certainly over that individual time trial, and one of the stages, well, the double Alpe d'Huez,
right.
where they had to be able to, and they were, you know, kind of complaining about it being potentially dangerous. This is what you do. I mean, you know, it wasn't so dangerous you thought that's impossible to do on a bike.
What makes me laugh is when they go, well, that's a really dangerous descent. Not asking you to jump a gap in a bridge on your road bike. We're asking you to do what you do every day.
Yeah.
You know, it would be, you know, it's not so out of kilter that, you know, they're standing there, what? I've got to get in the cage of death with a motorbike. I ride a road bike. But, you know, I think that's it now, is a lot of guys are kind of scrabbling around a little bit, thinking, oh, you know, I wasn't a good descender before. Oh, maybe I'm going to have to work on that. But like you said, it was always going to be the ones and twos percents.
Mm.
Chris Froome won by 5 minutes. Hopefully, or, you know, he's done it. He's been tested. He's done it clean. And that 5 minutes isn't because he's taken some secret drug. hopefully it's because he got those couple of percents right, and the other teams got their couple of percent wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and well, if you well, work that
the,
out,
the equipment, you know, the equipment, the, their equipment choices seem to, you know, make a lot of sense a lot of the times. There's probably other sponsors' equipment in some cases that is quicker. There's always things that happen. Knowing people that have dealt with teams, even various current teams, there's a lot of politics in what equipment they can use and what logos they've got to show up and what things they can, because otherwise you'd only have the most expensive stuff available. And it isn't some of the certainly some of the teams that are not necessarily going to get a podium aren't on the best frames. They're not using absolutely the best tires and stuff. That's why they rebrand some of the other tires with the supposed sponsors' tires. You know, there is this whole thing that they don't know, and it's bizarre, but they don't get the absolute best. They, no, I want that frame. They've got to have what their sponsor gives them. And therefore they aren't all actually on the absolute best possible. Even some of the winners aren't necessarily using the best pieces of equipment. A lot of it will be, because that's the way they've built it out, but sometimes there still are sponsors' requests or sponsors, things that they've got to do. Hence we had, you know, last year and this year, you know, Chris Froome was on off round rings, which Shimano don't do, and they're a Shimano team supposedly, but he's on off round rings, and so are the other teams.
I read a little article, and I think it was either one of his mechanics or one of the guys that works for Sky for the Sky team basically got these asymmetric rings for him, never pushed them, just said, look, to Bradley Wiggins first, do you want to try them? Yeah, all right, I'll try them. Tried them, was like, yeah, I love it. Gave them to Froome. Froome loved them as well. It was like he said, he worked for Sky, so there was no way he was going to push them. We just said, you know, they tried them and they liked them. Mm. And then found out that this guy was developing or making them. I can't remember which way it was. And he was like, at no point did I push them. He said, I just invited them to, you know, they found out, invited them to try. And
There were more visible off-round rings from asymmetric rotor. There's another one. I think there's another. I'm sure there's like a Japanese brand that suddenly started making them. Anyway, that's enough of Tour de France.
I digress.
You digress. So up to date, and it'll probably be out of date by the time I say it, but training camp, two places to go. Could be gone. Could be gone by now. I've said by the end of January? By the end of July, it is typically full. And it's 40 out of 42 places taken.
There you go.
And we hope to see you there this year,
Martin. Get you here to sunshine.
Yes.
That's what you need, sunshine.
There's, via the tweets, while I think about it, via the tweets, there was a link to an article from Peak Performance about ramp testing. So for people that maybe just swim or run, ramp testing is sitting on a bike and doing a set amount of work and progressing every, could be 3 minute blocks, it could be 1 minute blocks, but to assess how efficient you are by doing, say, 100, 150, 200, 250, 300 watts, and then seeing, assuming you can get to 300 watts, but seeing how your heart rate measures out on each of these various levels. You can do it running, and people don't realise running, you just set the treadmill 5 miles an hour, run, see what your heart rate is after 3 minutes, go up to 6 miles an hour, run, see what it is. It's exactly the same principle, and even better on a treadmill is that the speed stays exact. On an indoor test, it's quite possible for people to not quite be doing 200 watts, and therefore, unless you accurately test that they've done 200 watts, they can just be getting very good at fudging the data.
I love the word fudging
the data. I mean, some units do set it though, don't they? You can set it to 200 and it has to deliver 200 watts, so that is a better way of doing it. But if you are perhaps doing it on a system, you know, crank based system or hub based system that measures the watts but can't set it for you, you have to be very honest with yourself that when you're doing the wattage, you're not trying to keep it down a little bit, because you can see that the heart rate is not quite where you want it to be. So you want to do it blind if possible, cover up the heart rate, do the test, and then see afterwards what the data is.
Why would you do a ramp test,
Joseph? Why would you do it?
What is the benefit to doing a ramp test?
Okay, there are various benefits. Firstly, it will give you At that point in time, based on your health or your level of fitness or your lack of either of those, it will give you an idea of where you stand. So particularly if people are coming back, they've had, you know, a big chunk of time off for holiday, they've perhaps ended their season, properly had time off and then want to get back into it. Doing a ramp test will show them where they're at, okay? And often, and this is where having more data helps you, but the more times you do it, the more you realise you don't decondition as much as people think.
Yeah.
So you get back into it, go, oh, actually, the numbers aren't that bad. Do 3 weeks of training, going, oh, actually, that's not far off what it was last year anyway. So you start to notice that you can find your conditioning fairly quickly so that you have, therefore, confidence in where you're at. Sometimes if people are ill, I say, well, do it anyway, so long as you're not seriously ill, do it anyway and just see what you get, because then you'll have an idea what level of drop you get when you're ill, and it's often not as much as people think.
Yeah.
And so you get a sense that, you know, it gives you confidence, lets you know where your health is at, and also you can see the off-season effect. You'll get really good numbers around now, you know, May, June, July, August. You'll get some of probably your best numbers. You're racing, you're training, there's, you know, very long days, therefore you get good numbers. As we go, certainly by the time we get to October, definitely November, and worst case scenario, December, January, you'll see it, even if you're training, you'll see it not be at its best. There is no reason for you to be physiologically at your fittest, unless you are a listener in New Zealand or Australia, which we've got a question from somebody actually from Australia. But in the off season, i.e. for us, anywhere between kind of October, late October through to almost February, maybe just January, those 3 months, your ramp test drops away.
Yeah.
So you won't be able to do so much work. So you do have to be realistic how fast or how much work you can do. And if you know where your 80% level is, the ramp test to show you how many watts you can do before you cross that threshold. And if you're only doing it for 3 minutes, it may well be that you can't even hold that wattage for, say, 30 minutes because you get a slight bit of drift. But it just gives you a sense of how efficient are you. If you get more efficient, whoa, look at that. Same wattage, heart rate's dropped. And that's without you doing any kind of time trial. This is sub-maximal. For most people, that means probably it's probably 25-watt increments for there to be a big enough difference. So 100, 125, 150, 175, 200, and maybe 225.
That's right. That was the next thing I was going to say. What would your kind of basic protocol if you wanted to do a ramp test be?
Yeah, I mean, some people, and it depends on their gender and their size, some people, you know, 200 watts is their 10-mile time trial effort.
Yeah.
Some people, that is what they will, well, they'll be over that for a steady, and I mean steady, five-hour ride. They're over that. And that's two completely different individuals. So you probably want to look at, smaller and for female athletes, you probably want to start almost at a 75 watt point and do 75, 100, 125, 150, 175, something like that. And by the 175, they'll probably be working, but there's five data points. The 175 in the summer won't be hard work. The 175 in the winter will show you quite how hard work it is in the off season to do it. And it's just, you know, you've got to play around with it. But I posted this article that was from Peak Performance, and it gave Graham O'Bree's data from way back when. And it was 1997, I believe. And, you know, just shows that, you know, at this point when he won the national championship later on that year, it just shows his data. Okay, it was on a cat-eye, which may not have been, you know, certainly as accurate as SRM rotors, power taps, things like that. But it was still a benchmark. And if he did it the same every time, it didn't matter that not everybody's tacks or what other turbo trainers have you got? Cyclops, all these different ones. Some of them measure watts. It doesn't mean they measure the right watts. But if you're doing it the same each time, if you do it ideally, you know, with a fan on you so you don't get too much heat drift, clearly with the 30 degree temperatures that we'd had in the summer, if you do this test and it's 30 degrees around you, you're unlikely to get reasonable data because you aren't standardizing for temperature as best as you can. A lot of times it doesn't make a big difference, but you should try to do it in conditions that don't affect it. And it's one of those things that you get numbers and you think, oh yeah, what does that mean? And then you get numbers 2 months later, 2 years later, or straight before your best race and go, wow, my numbers look really good. I think I'm on for a good one. Lo and behold, somebody gets a good race. Like, yeah, we can measure it submaximally. Okay, how much of your, you know, absolute, not maximum, clearly you don't ride at maximum, but whether you can hold 89% or 92% of your best, or rather of your peak, is up to your mental side of it. But if physically the ramp test shows you, actually, you're in quite good nick, then at least you've got that as something to say, I reckon I could do this. Yeah. And that's what people get that ride on power, heart rate, or on some of the sort of metrics that allow them to say, do you know what, I'm not trying, but I'm getting some of the best data I've ever done. I've just run around that loop. I'm not trying. I'm back in 6 minutes quicker than I've ever done. I'm going really well. Yeah. And that's what this gives you. But if it's indoors and it's on a turbo or it's on a treadmill, it's one of those simple things that at the very least, it could just be a warm-up. And it's a warm-up that gives you numbers with which to say, okay, yeah, I thought that was about right. And because it's sub-maximal, there's no psychology involved. You've just got to do what the machine asks you to do.
And what you set out to do. What you set out to do.
And so as a follow-on to that, I've got my, which you've seen, my new website is in kind of beta mode, trying to get it working. But on there, when it comes out, I've got the original article that I did for Inside Triathlon on ramp tests. And we've got, it was CompuTrainer data from an American triathlete that I was working with at the time. And he was a really good biker. And we've got his data and how it progressed. And you know, this was the start of ramp testing on other people. I'd been doing ramp testing prior to that because it was something that we did when I was doing my degree. You kind of, but what you did was you did it as a way of getting up to max. But I just thought, how often can you do max? Not too often. Let's just do it to sub-max levels and started to sort of do ramp testing. So that was, I think that was 1995. And I know I've definitely got data. Don't laugh at me. Why? Why are you laughing at me?
You don't look old enough, Joseph.
I do with this beard. but it was, it's a thing where when you write that, you don't realise that the ramp test is one of those things that can, you know, catch on and be of use, because you don't need a lab. There's a lot of systems and there's a lot of people riding with power, or you go to a gym and you use a treadmill. So why not use it to say, right, I'll do standard warm-up. I'll do 5, 6, 7, 8 miles an hour. I'll do 3 minutes on each, and I'll see what my heart rate is in the last 15 seconds of those 3 minutes. There you go. You've got 12-minute warm-up, and you've got your four numbers that you can scribble down on a post-it. There's your numbers. That'll give you either, oh, yeah, I thought I'd come back after I was ill and I was a bit rough. I can see it in the numbers. But not only that, it might say, look, if the numbers aren't good, don't try and run at your best pace, because you won't be in zone one. And if that point of that exercise is to say you're not quite as fit as you should be, that doesn't flick a switch that says, I know, the best idea I could do now is interval training. Yeah. No, you need to put some time in the bank and cruise. And the ramp test is, you know, it's a series of numbers, but it's what you do with them and in the context that you take
them. That's another thing as well, is deciphering. This is what I've always said about things, you know, getting power taps and things like that. It's easy enough to write down figures. It's easy enough to store figures, but to decipher them into you doing a good race or producing a good performance is still quite a... I know a lot of it is open to interpretation, but you still need to know your basics, don't you? You know, and that's your job, as in, you know, the athlete's job, to kind of arm themselves with that kind of information.
Absolutely. So. And it's one of those things that isn't as difficult or as useless. I think people sort of think, oh, yeah, but it'd just be me doing it and it won't be any good. There are a lot of tests that I see people pay good money for that we've already worked out what the outcomes are going to be. And it just shows, oh yeah, your max power is this, your max heart rate is this, and this is this. Yeah. The difference between last time was a good day, bad day. And that's all it was. Yeah, it didn't show anything. There wasn't any extra, you know, golden nuggets that were found. It just reconfirms it. And if you've got some kind of ramp test that gives you a way of using 12 to 15 minutes at the beginning of a session in the gym, on your turbo trainer, and from that you can glean something that will be certainly useful information to say, oh, I'm getting more efficient, wow. And I've seen people that, you know, they've started and they've got to a certain point and said, oh, that last workload, I just went over zone 1-2 by the end, I was into zone 2 by the end, let's say 200 watts, and 4 months later they've been training and say, wow, I can stay in zone 1 now, I've actually gone up to 225 watts and I'm still in zone 1. Yeah. So that person knows that they're 25 watts better off, and lo and behold, how is it going on the road when you're riding? Oh, yeah, going quite well. Well, of course it is. You're 25 watts better off.
That's right.
If
yeah.
you lose that and you're in the middle of the off season and your numbers don't look good, don't expect you're going to be able to go out and train comfortably when all those around you are all fitter than you, because you'll be flogging yourself. And this could be, you know, a group of runners, group of cyclists. It's yeah, it's there. Go and see. There's a link from the Twitter feed that's got this data from Peak Performance, and when the website goes live, it'll also be this ramp test from Inside Triathlon will be up on there. The quality's not amazing, but it was a scan that was done. You can read it, can't you? It's readable.
You're asking the wrong man, mate.
Oh, right.
it's actually in front of me on the biggest screen you've ever seen. Yeah, it's all right. It's good. I can get that one.
Yeah. You were looking in a totally wrong direction. Yeah, you're looking out the window then.
You're looking
in the mirror then, going, yeah. Oh, that computer's got a nice picture on it.
There's a man squinting at me.
Yeah. Listeners' questions. Here we go. Over to you, Martin. You can be our newsreader.
Huh. Well, I like to shuffle paper.
Yeah.
This one is from Mark F. And it was a question too. It says, hi, Joe and Crocker. Loving the podcast. Just a question regarding base training, moving into racing season, and guarding against losing speed. I am from Australia, and as we are at the end of winter, I'm about 13 weeks away from my first Olympic try of the season, the lovely Noosa Triathlon. I have recently taken your advice, and instead of battering myself every session, have been spending the bulk of my training in Zone 1, albeit at 70 to 80% max heart rate. I want to ask the following. When should I start incorporating things like hill sprints, fartlek, fast speed intervals, etc. into my biking, running and swimming? When is the optimum time to start including 1 to 3 zone 3 sessions per week? Should I save the hills / intervals for these zone 3 sessions, or sneak some of these into my zone 1 sessions? I want to ensure I don't end up going slower than my Olympic tries last year.
Yeah.
I maintain a decent level of fitness over winter, and I'm aiming for 2 to 3 of each swim, bike, run sessions per week from now until the try, as well as 2 strength training sessions per week and 1 yoga / core, and will train about 10 hours week in the week in total. Love your work, and your help is much appreciated, Mark.
Yeah. I mean, it's good. It's a good detailed question. And I think I would start by saying he's doing a lot of things right and he's thinking about it. But the difficult part is that how long is a piece of string? You know, he sort of says, you know, when should I start incorporating it? And I think there's various ways to look at it. One is to work back from your race, and you're talking about Noosa, and you say that it's sort of 13 weeks away. And if you think about in our scenario, if you think back from, say, you know, the first races in, I can't think what the equivalent it would be, if he's talking about 13 weeks and this was in August, so he's talking about it just being into October, yeah? So that's the equivalent of us being sometime around about sort of April, May?
Probably say April.
April. I think so, and if you think about it, there's lots of enthusiasm. When you get to February, the amount of people chomping at the bit to really start working hard. So, whoa, we've still got a while yet.
Yeah,
you get an amazing effect kind of just through February and March by the fact you start moving out of winter. And, yeah, there does need to be a little bit of intensity, but I don't think you flick a switch. And if you look at even, say, 6 weeks of deliberate building to what is just his first event, that's the way to look at it. If he starts now and does 3 months to his first event, he's taking away potentially another 6 weeks of preparation work and trying to be ready for the first race and really going for it. I think you want to look at several ways, really. Firstly, is your zone one topping off? Are you going, I'll get to the top of zone one and I'm flying. I actually, you know, can't run or bike at the top of zone one. I just feel as though I would be absolutely exhausted to do that for, you know, anything more than about 30-40 minutes. I'd be blown away by trying to stay there. Almost feels like tempo work even though you're still in zone one. So that shows that somebody's zone one has developed, that they're way down in zone one when they do their base work. So yeah, I'm nowhere near the top of zone one. I can stay down low. When I do my hard work, therefore, to get out of zone one takes a lot of hard work, but I'm not tired from doing some of those other sessions slightly too hard. So now you're starting to think about quality. You've got to watch the speed of the quantity stuff. And that means if you can't keep your heart rate down low enough in zone one, then you're not ready to start doing zone three. You're still development in the aerobic system. But if you're looking at the amount of stuff you've done, decent level of fitness, you say decent level of fitness and then you're aiming for 2 to 3 swim, bike and run. It sounds like you're still maybe developing your fitness. If you did this in August, this is like somebody sending us a question in January that would say, yeah, I've had decent level of fitness, but I'm aiming to be, you know, it's completely different. They're their new year is August the 1st. When we would think about it, how we've always thought about sport, your season is, you know, it's into the new year. So come, what is January the 1st for us, but in Mark's case, August the 1st, it's like, right, this is the start of the, okay, of just the new year. But it's still going to be that 3 months later, you start to see good form and you haven't been doing hammering speed work because you're going to take away too much of the potential base speed work.
That's right.
And by that, I mean by the fact, if you keep training, in our case, January, February, March, and in his case, August, September, October, just by the fact that you're training regularly with a little bit of high intensity, but the fact that you are coming out of winter and into spring, you're going to go quicker anyway.
That's it.
And people get this wrong, that they try and batter themselves to get quicker and not naturally let themselves get quicker anyway, to the point where if you're struggling to get up to the top of zone one, then you start saying, wow, I can't do my zone one stuff near the top. It's got to be way down. And it's more, you know, kind of like, it feels quick, but the heart rate's really low. And then you do your high intensity work. But in 10 hours, you maybe do a total of an hour and a half tops of hard work. That's still, no, not even an hour and a half, maybe an hour to an hour and a quarter. So 60 to 75 minutes worth of very hard work. So that could be, you know, 30 minute or 20 to 30 minute hard core parts of a session done 3 times a week. You're doing Olympic tries, so you don't need, you know, if you do an hour, even an hour and a quarter's worth of hard work per week, that's good, you know. But it's not doing too much of the zone two work. I think zone two work is good when you're coming into getting used to doing zone three work, because you can't just do loads of base and then start throwing in zone three, because your body won't be used to it. Once you feel as though top of zone one has topped off, as I've always said, you just go, blimey, I feel so fit. Now I've got to push hard to get out of zone one. You'll find for a while you can only really get into zone two. Your muscles will only be used to that. And you'll get used to it, but don't think you've got to flick a switch, because by the time you hear this, you'll be down to 12 weeks. Okay, that's 3 months. That's a long time.
I was going to say, the 13 weeks sounds like, oh, it's just around the corner. It is quite a big chunk of time for you to get it wrong.
You think, that's January 1st through to March.
To March, yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. If you,
but not even March the 1st. That's through to potentially the end of March. That's chalk and cheese.
Oh, it's huge. It's a huge thing. But it's enough time for you to get it massively wrong for you to turn around and go, oh no, I'm beginning to feel a bit tired, and you haven't even started your season. You'll see a lot of athletes on their start of their season produce something where you go, oh, they were a lot better than this last year, but you only remember really their good races, don't you? And then when they're coming into form, you're going, "Wow, that was a better performance." And then when they win something or finish on the podium, you're going, "Oh, that's more like it." But it's all a matter of training. Their training takes time to absorb. You know, they have to do test events. You know, they have to test themselves out. If they strike lucky and kind of come into it relatively fit, then brilliant. But some of them you kind of look at and go, "Oh, good lord!"
With Mark's race Noosa. That might be your first Olympic try of the season, but can you get some sprint tries? Can you do, you know, just aquathlons, time trials, even run races, and just start to use in your months? I'd start to use September through to halfway through October to start to just dip into the pre-competitive phase. You're coming to the back end of winter, you've started to do a few test events, but you're not trying to, you know, just blow yourself away to the extent that you just think, "Oh no, it's not there, it's not there." You're building. You've got 3 months, that's a heck of a long time.
Yeah.
And that's to the first event. And if you go too hard, you'll get to the first event, you'll wish it's over three quarters of the way through, and then you won't be fired up for the next one. The first event is very rarely when somebody does their best event. It makes absolutely no sense. Whatever the sport, you see people build through it, or they'll do test events, or out of view of everybody, or in their own little, you know, competitive arena, they've done some tests to go, "Yeah, I'm starting to build the form." Because I very much believe in this idea of fitness and form. And your fitness, you sort of build that by the fact you do your steady sessions and you get the endurance and you get the ability to sort of hold up to what the race gives you. But your form is your ability to deliver that top end as best as you can in a race. And that doesn't just happen automatically.
No.
You kind of shine it. You get it just right by the fact that you use run race to the next race to the next race. And I've always thought that probably Olympic distance, it's a funny 2 to 3 hour window that I think you need other races to complement it.
Yeah.
Because it's long enough you can't do it too regularly, but it's short enough you can do it really hard. So you need sprint races and even part sprint races, like I guess they're working kilometres. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Working kilometres, you know, 16K, 20K TTs, 5K, 10K runs, you know, open water, you know, 1,000 metre, 2,000 metre swims. Just get used to racing over those distances as your key sessions a week.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, end up at about an hour to an hour and a quarter. But that still means that you're looking at no less than 8 hours of other stuff, technical, stamina. Some of it may even go slightly into zone two, though it's not meant to be. And you've got your yoga and your strength. And your strength is still high intensity, but don't take that too close to the race.
Yeah.
Or you'll be, you know, just your strength can develop when you get into this phase. Just watch that it doesn't take away from the quality work. And it's really difficult to do a quality swim, quality bike, quality run, do that every week for the 12-week period and not find that you've blown yourself just to pieces, just to get to the race you're already done in. And I think for a lot of people to have, you know, one or potentially two breakthroughs a week, but it doesn't happen every week.
Yeah.
Some weeks you just go, "Oh, I just kept them where they were and they were quite hard work this week," because you've got like this 4-week cycle where there's a great week where you can just bash out any session you want and your body
seems
keeps
to cope with it. Yeah, yeah.
2-3 weeks later, you can barely get through the training week. That's the thing to try and get right, is to work back from the event and cycle it so that you're always having the 4th week in the phase is the taper or the back off. So you've got the taper to Noosa, 4 weeks before that you've got a back off adaptation weeks, 4 weeks before that, 4 weeks before that. So in effect, when this goes out, you should be at the end of an adaptation week or thereabouts, depending on when you listen to this. But, you know, it's good to have a plan, but I think you just got to roll with it. If you bring your form on and gradually see what the numbers are in terms of kind of, you know, what you aimed to do in the Olympic distance races, which I'm assuming they're comparable races, because it's not obvious that races are even comparable sometimes. They can be such different courses and temperatures.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you got hill sprints, fartlek, fast speed intervals and stuff, don't over confuse, don't over complicate it. It doesn't have to be that much more difficult than right. You know, you're aiming
what you're
for
pretty much now, isn't it? You know, I know you want to measure it, but sometimes when you go, right, I need to do that session there, that session's got to be there because I'm doing that on that day and that on that. You know, and what you end up doing is muddying the waters a little bit when you just want to go, well, what week am I on? All right, it's the first week, so it's after my adaptation week. So you're like that, well, I'm going to be pretty much like a bull in a china shop. I'd want to go at it, but you just got to hold it back because you've still got another, you know, effectively two hard weeks or kind of hardening weeks, if you know.
So they get harder
as they go along.
So you don't want to do it in the first week back and not be able to do it the next week. The whole point why intervals work is that they don't even have to always be progressive. I think people think they're just going to keep going faster and faster and faster. If you get them wrong by going too hard week one, you could be clinging on just to repeat it on two and three. The fourth week you'd want to do, even in the adaptation week, you want to do a little bit of harder work, but it's very much a case of literally just dip in and dip out, just to remind the muscles. But the gross sum of that week is to say, wow, I feel great at the end of the week. Any stresses on the muscles, anything like that, is all been, you know, recuperated and so on. It's a difficult one, but I think keep it simple. Probably in the pool, there is bound to be an opportunity within one of your swims to, you know, include maybe, you know, a block set or two sets split through the swim, whereby you're doing something like, you know, 15 to 20 minutes of hard swimming. It's got to be good technique, or else you're just practicing bad technique. On the bike, it can be as plain and as simple as a classic, you know, 6x4 minutes,
yeah,
with 2 minutes off in between. Doable, ideally with power or with speed or with some way of ensuring that you keep the quality up, but you don't do one great one and then the next week is not quite so good. You've got to try and build it, but you're not going to start and keep building it for the next 12 weeks every week. You've got to kind of back off. And sometimes people go, oh, I've been going a bit hard, actually, I need to back off, or I'm actually going to not bring my form on too much. You're going to take too much out of this thing up here and find that your brain just can't take the race. You've got to feel stronger by this training. You don't do it
not
and go,
drained.
I'm absolutely exhausted. I mean, some sessions take a little bit of grit to get through, but you should still notice that as you build towards this first race, you still feel like you're on top of it. I really do believe that adaptation is vital, because you don't want a great training diary and a really, you know, tired, underperforming athlete. You want somebody that's chomping at the bit to go, yeah, I'm ready for this one, but this still ain't going to be my season. Still the first race, and ideally at, you know, 6 or 8 weeks into this plan to Noosa, you get a sprint try, or you do something on your own in the pool, then bike and then run, just to go, yeah, but there's still changing in the disciplines. There's still a sense that, you know, I don't just want to, you know, do stuff. You maybe treat 1 week as saying, well, my hour and a quarter is going to be an hour and a quarter's, you know, flat out effort, split over three parts of the day. That's swim, right, bike, run, good warm ups in each, and then maybe not quite race distance. You might do, you know, 10 minute really hard swim, you know, 30 minute hard time trial on the bike, and a 5K run. Split up over the day. That's all your hard work in one day, and the other 6 days in that week are just, you know, technique, etc., etc.
Yeah. And another thing is with that, Mark, is, you know, Noosa being your first event, that's the key. It's your first event. So if things don't go to plan or things go really well, you still have to think, oh, good, I'm looking forward to the next one. Don't go, well, I'm going so well, I'll chuck another couple in there just in case, because I am going well.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is your first event, so you do need what I like to call a kind of the slaps, the little slaps you get across the face for when you go and do your first TT or your sprint try, and you go, oh, I forgot how hard, you know, sprint tries are. But it's that little wake-up call where you kind of go, right, I understand why I'm doing certain sessions gently and why I'm doing certain sessions hard, because, you know, that's given me a little bit of a wake-up call. I know what it feels like now. And then you kind of have your, maybe you're training for then the week, and then go and do a TT at the end of the week and go, oh, yeah, I remember that as well.
Yeah.
It's all about getting back into your mindset of going, well, I've had 2 months off doing this winter training where I've been zone one, and I bleat on about it all the time. You just spend that zone one in the winter is the most miserable. It is the most miserable time.
Not,
really.
Not in Australia, it's not.
Well, no, but for us, it's just bleak. And I kind of look at, I almost dread looking at the Garmin and going, oh, God, things going to read me power again and my heart rate. But we go out on a winter ride, don't we? We used to go out early Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
And the 2.25-hour loop we used to do, by the time spring's coming in, we're having to chuck in an extra little loop just to make it up to two hours.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then you're kind of thinking to yourself, oh, it is getting better. You know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, and Mark's at that end of the tunnel, so to speak. Yeah. He's still coming out of the winter phase on the positive side anyway. They will have just had their... they've gone past the shortest day. As I said, they're at the equivalent...
The dark abyss, as I like to call it.
But... It is important to make sure you taper into the event, you're realistic about it, you've planned it, you know that there's nothing to do in the last 7 days but keep yourself, you know, snappy and well prepared. And just, you know, it's, you're going to Noosa, you're not going to the noose, basically.
Yes. I like what you've done there, Joseph. I like what you've done there.
You've got to enjoy it. If you're enjoying it, you're up for it, you have a great race. If you think, you know, that something miraculous is going to happen as a result of the performance, prove us wrong. If you can, you know, make headlines all over the world from your performance, great. But most people don't.
Yeah.
Therefore, most people can relax about it. Most people don't need to. We were, before we started recording, we were talking about how people, you know, sometimes train with such a just horrible attitude with the fact that they scowl at everybody they see, and they're just so, you know, they either just look people up and down as if to say, oh, I don't know whether I think your brands are good enough or whatever. But some people are a bit like that. It's like, look, you know, the professionals, well, look, we had Alex Dow sit down in this area for quite a few days 2 weeks ago, and such a lovely guy.
Yeah,
really
lovely guy.
Really nice, chat away, rides to our time trial, wins the time trial on drops, and is you know, really, really just a very, very nice guy. And yet people that, you know, are nowhere near his performance level, who have got a chip on their shoulder, sometimes ride the other way, scowling as if to sort of say, who are those people? Oh, I don't know whether I think you're good enough. And you kind of think, look, racing and training is playtime.
Well, that's it.
Enjoy it.
You're out doing it because you enjoy it. So that's the main thing.
Yeah.
And like you said, if anybody comes down to North Devon and sees a grinning, waving idiot on a bike, that's me. So, but that's the number one thing, is if you enjoy it, if you've got a passion for it, then, you know, that's your hobby. You know, it's not your job, unless you're one of that few percent where it is your job.
Yes, but no,
fantastic.
But even that argument doesn't follow, because if something is your job, you should be able to be happy doing it. You should be able to be, because it was, well, it is Alex Dowsett's job. Yeah, he's still quite happy to, you know, to chat to people, to ride his bike, to do various local, you know, kind of like chain gangs and sessions and stuff. And everybody's had so much positive to say about, oh, what a lovely bloke, really great, really great. Yeah, because it's not because he's a good rider, it's not anything. It's because you just either are, you know, the majority of people, and that means you're happy, or there is a small percentage of people that seem to scowl at everybody, whether they're driving their car, looking across a cash till at you, doing a triathlon opposite you, whatever. I think there is an attitude thing that some people have, and I think it's really important to smile and to, you know, to be kind of thinking, I'm doing this race, this is great fun. Yeah, it might hurt at times and you might be in a bit of a hole, but you don't want to be that scowling person that people go, God, they take it a bit serious, don't they? You know, I like to push myself, and sometimes you can catch yourself thinking, God, that was a bit of a grimace, but it's a grimace at yourself. That's a completely different thing to not being able to wave to somebody, you know, in the middle of what some people say, oh, weren't you taking it serious? It's like, yeah, but that doesn't stop you waving or having a bit of a laugh, going the other way and doing a little laugh on your aero bars, or running up behind somebody in the middle of a race and slapping them on the backside and just going, I got you. You know, that's part of why you do it, because it's fun. And I think that, you know, it's obviously different for the sort of people that are 6 months ahead of us, and they're coming out of winter and they're just beginning to think about, you know, training and all of that. And we're getting, okay, we've still got quite a bit of summer left, but, you know, we've had the longest days. There's still plenty of warm, long days, fingers crossed. But that shouldn't change your attitude.
No.
I mean, I like the winter because it's going to come around every year, so you may as well get used to it.
Might as well just get on with it.
Just get on with it. But it's an interesting thing, that whole clicking of the calendar over to January, and people start to panic. At least in the case of our question, they're still in August, September. There isn't a new year. They may be coming into their triathlon season, but they're coming, and I can't imagine what that's like.
I was just thinking that then, thinking, well, Mark must be sat there going, what are these two moaning about winter? Yeah. But if you think for us, Christmas and New Year is the marker, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Where you go, right, January's here. Oh, it's almost like a breath of fresh air, wouldn't it? You kind of get all your kit out and you go, right, this is where the training, this is where the hard work now is beginning to build. Poor old Mark must get to Christmas and go, well, for me, it's just Christmas is like 5 days of just letting loose a little bit, you know, maybe as in...
No, he eat, doesn't let loose a little and, bit.
I mean, something to eat and drink, a little bit more than you probably would do. But poor old Mark, you must just think, oh, I've done all this training, and then you get to Christmas and go, oh no, there's going to be plenty of food on offer.
I've got one client in Australia, and I've got another one that's emigrating as we speak.
Yeah.
Who's going to still do his multi sports, and you have funny conversations because you're in one mindset here.
Yeah.
It's
exactly.
Not only for clients, but you know, I'm still doing a few endurance events and stuff, and I'm in that sort of mode. And you have to turn it on its head and think about what somebody's doing.
Yeah.
But what's good about that is it actually makes you have to be aware of where you're at here to be aware of where they're at there.
Yeah,
in terms
yeah,
of
yeah.
There is a cyclical nature to it. There is seasons, not only seasons from the perspective of football seasons, rugby seasons, endurance seasons, but also there's you know, biological seasons when things grow outside at the moment and are come into bloom, and they'll start to wither and die and disappear and come back round again. And there's that sense that if you're tuned into that and what's going on, you realise that not all things are correctly done by everybody all the time.
Yes.
Because they can be, because there's some things we say, well, that's not relevant to now, or if it sort of is, you could still be doing better. And I think that's what this whole, you know, question about when do I do this, when do I do that, it's all down to what part of your season are you at, and are you doing something that's, you know, coming to an absolute peak, and therefore there'd be a recovery period afterwards and something else? Or is it that you're in a kind of like, oh, well, I've always done it this way, and how can I change? And to me, it's about thinking about the, you know, the bigger picture of what are you trying to do, and what's going on around you. Because it's really difficult if somebody says, I want to peak for an event in December, and it's like, ooh, okay, you can do it, but it's pretty hard. And people that do cyclocross are pretty hard because of how hard it is to do it. But they're still not doing their best performances in the winter compared to if they did something similar in the summer.
Yeah, that's it.
You know. You're right?
Awesome.
Good. I'm just checking. We don't get smiles on this. It's all right. We're coming up to the hour now, Mark. You don't have to like.
Oh,
you
know, no, that was anticipation.
You don't have to fill in any gaps by just doing smiling.
It doesn't really work.
No, it doesn't really work.
I see what you're saying.
So, my what are you going to do this month? And this could be relevant for northern or southern hemisphere.
Yeah.
Review your races. What have you done? What are you going to do? You know, what are you going to peak for? What's left in the tank? We're coming into, you know, the August September period. There's actually something coming out in 220. I think it's going to be next week. Issue 290, whenever that comes out, it might be next week. About getting the last bit out of the season, because you know what I mean. People get to. I've had conversations already, but only just into August. About might be getting. You know,
I'm about done now.
No, about. Yeah, getting really ready for my winter training. Like, whoa. Don't mention the W
Don't mention the W word right now. We're not allowed to mention that till at least September.
Oh, crikey. The end of September.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, August and September are great months. There's lots of endurance events. There's certainly lots in the tank, and you don't want to be thinking about laying your endurance base early. Have a bit of fun. If you've done your A races or you're getting back into it, well, go and try out sessions. Do some, you know, random, you know, group sessions just to see what they're like. Are they totally headbanging? Are they good fun? Are they whatever? Do you know what I mean? Try that.
Yeah.
Because what can go wrong at this point? I mean, unless you've got an A race coming up in the next month to 6 weeks, now is often for a lot of people it's stacked, front-loaded a lot of the season.
Yeah.
And not that many people that are triathletes go to Kona. Yes, the World Age Group Championships may well be September. There are quite a few time trials and running races that go that late. But there's a lot of stuff in the latter part of September. So why not? You know, there are some people entering triathlons into October saying, oh, there's one more race I want to do. It's like, great. Race right up to when it's all empty.
Yeah.
And you're dying to have time off and get them back into a, right, I'm ready to do some training. The worst you could do is, you know, flick the calendar, go, oh, September 1st, I'm going to start my winter training. It's like, whoa.
What a miserable...
Don't make it any longer than it needs to. I mean, you might well be doing training that is not necessarily, you know, super high intensity, but that's the time to do your ramp test benchmarks.
Yeah.
That's the time to try out new routes and see what they're like, because you'll still be fit in September and just into October. So if you do find yourself, you know, way out on a run or a bike and thinking, blimey, I wouldn't want to be doing this in the middle of winter, this is really taking everything out of me, you've done it while you're still fit.
Yeah.
But you do that, fast forward to the middle of December and try and do that route and find yourself a bit overdone, and you'll be doing what we don't want. We do not want you October, November, December really pushing the boat out. It's too early.
Yeah,
really is too early. And I think, although we're talking about it now, you've got to preempt that by saying to people, look, although you might have done your races, use the next 2 months for whatever you want to do. Fun stuff, completely different stuff than what you've done before, or go off and explore different routes or different groups to train with, but don't sort of think that you're into winter mode, because it's just
awful.
Yeah, because it's just, we know it's coming, and it definitely is a case that by the time you get to the middle of October, there's no way you can be kidding yourself you still should be going out in shorts. I mean, come on, that's muppetry. Absolutely. So there's got to be a you know, an annual cycle, and that's why that was quite interesting, the question from somebody on the southern hemisphere.
Over the border.
But you've got to think about your races, what you've done, what you're going to do, whether there's still time left to think, oh, do something completely different. And people say, I'm going to do a half marathon beginning of October. Great, fine. You know, switch into a different mode if you like.
Yeah,
don't
yeah.
think that the first half determines what the second half should be. And maybe the first half has thrown you a completely different set of circumstances that you go, oh, yeah, I didn't do this, or oh, actually, I've started doing this and I love it, I want to do more of it, or I've been injured, I missed some races out, I just want to get some stuff done towards the end. Great, do it. You know, don't think as though whatever you're deciding, let's say November, December time, whatever you're deciding then will absolutely unfold next year in 2014 and unfold exactly as you plan it.
Yeah,
it won't. Even now, there are things that don't change. And with the situation with triathlon now, people are entering their Ironmans now
for next year.
Roth closed in 3 minutes. So 3 minutes and it was gone. People were staying up to midnight, they got in and that was it. Another one, I think Switzerland has just closed, and that was pretty rapid. So people are having to think about next year, and they enter the race. Like, enter the race, great, but let's not do too much about it. Let's start to put things in place in terms of your, you know, your pattern of how you're going to negotiate. Not saying everyone has extra time off work, but how you're going to get, you know, your work routine. Maybe you want to ride to work or something occasionally, or how you're going to fit in, you know, lunchtime runs. Is there a sports center nearby you can change, or what? Start to think about logistics of stuff, because you can't go at it like a bull in a china shop in September and say, I'm really going to get, you know, Ironman training. It's too long. We're going to go into a dip and you're going to be training through that dip at your highest level. No, you can't do it. So I think you kind of, you know, get your events sorted out. Look at what you've done this far into this year. Can you do a bit more stuff? Something completely different. Maybe you've never entered, I don't know, maybe you've never done a cycle across. Do one. Do one of the early ones just for the hell of it. Borrow a bike and do one.
Yeah.
Do a, you know, do a mountain, not a mountain marathon, do a you know, an off-road half marathon, or your first open time trial or something like that. Just something a bit different, because people do stuff and go, oh, now I've done it, I think I might do some more of that. You think, why didn't you do it before? Oh, it never really fitted into what I was doing in my training plan. Well, open up a bit. Don't get...
Don't be so regimented.
Or go different routes. You know, just as simple as do a route backwards and go, I just found a blinding course for my hill reps. What was it? Oh, it was the normal route, but back to front. Well done. You know?
You do realise we are talking about winter training now.
Yeah, well, subtly,
We've drifted into it, Joseph.
Yes, I know. Anyway, we have done our 1 hour and about 5 minutes. So look out for the tweets. There were a few questions, but I'm not gonna do them all. I wanted to go in depth a bit more to the training one, but also the other bits. And any of the tweet questions, I will send out replies probably via the Facebook page, because you can get more on the Facebook page than you can on the tweets. So send us your questions for next time. We'll be doing one towards the end of August for September. So this is in the season. So don't think we're talking about winter training, because we haven't been, have we? No.
Not
we're
yet.
Talking about racing right to the limit, and that's what this 220 article is. It's you know, end of season sort of boost. Don't draw a line under the year yet. There's too much to be done. I think it's far. When people say it, oh, not quite sure. It's August. Think, no, please do
don't
something.
Don't wish it away.
Don't wish it away. No, because in six months' time, it'll be dark at, you know, at 20,
I don't want to talk
at,
about
at
it.
You know, 10 to 4, it'll be dark.
Horrible.
Horrible. So thank you once again, Martin. Thank you. And looking very resplendent in your nice top.
It's kind of, this is
Pro Shop, it says on it. It says Pro
kind of
Shop.
Thing I just pull off.
It says Pro Shop. Yeah, you do it well. Much. You do it well, yes. So contact us with your questions. Also, newsletter going out. Twitter feed between the podcasts, watch that, and Facebook page as well. Add your reviews at the iTunes page, and thank you for downloading. By the looks of the ratings, we are still holding our head above water, Martin, which is good and brilliant.
Thank you very much.
Remember, train smart and have
a happy Christmas. So we're talking about Happy New Year. Oh, we're not there yet. Oh, my God. No. Have fun.
Test. 1, 2, 3.
2.
Martin.
Peeking it right out there, bye.